Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Guys in Ties podcast. This is Dustin. I've got Rob on the phone, and it's Sunday. It's around 8 o'clock. I just watched the Saints win, so it's not been a total bust of a weekend for football for me. Rob, on the other hand, a brutal weekend. Washington loses. UVA loses in historically bad fashion. Rob, one word to describe your football weekend.
Disappointing. Mm-hmm. Although I guess we'll hold out hope for the fantasy team. You know, maybe they can salvage that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a tough weekend to be a football fan in my household.
Even my fantasy team's gonna win. You know, the Saints were playing the Bucks, but I've got Brady and Mike Evans. Luckily, Brady threw 4 touchdowns, and then I went ahead. My opponent doesn't have anyone left, and I was like, cool, now the Saints can beat down on him. And we ended up winning, which is great. So I'm happy about that, but I'm not happy about the UVA defense. Brennan gets hurt at the end of the game, obviously, and UVA loses 66-49. In Provo. We're going to discuss it. I think it's going to be more of a feelings podcast. There might be some stats thrown out, Rob, but I'm feeling like I just need to like kind of talk through it a little bit. Is that how you're feeling, or do you want more structure?
No, I mean, we'll get some stats in there here and there, but yeah, I mean, just reading the sentiment on Twitter, reading the sentiment on the message boards, and just talking to people, you know, you included, I definitely feel like there's a lot of frustrations that I guess we'll just air out here
Over
the course of the podcast.
Exactly. And before we get into it, I do want to talk about our sponsors from Symbol. We have a new sponsor that you guys are going to love. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your teams win, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 7,000 plus early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.simbull.com to create a free account, and when you deposit, make sure to use the promo code SD to make your deposit risk-free. Visit simbull.com and use the promo code SD, and your deposit will be risk-free. That means even if you lose money, Symbol will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Join Symbol and start investing and profiting on your favorite teams. We are also sponsored by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live, audio-only sports talk platform. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. Get in on the conversations that you listen to on your podcasts every single day. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app for free in the iOS App Store. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever groups you want. Go ahead and share your takes on Spotify Green Room.
UVA football is the softest bunch of cream puffs, bow tie wearing, brie cheese eating, NASCAR wearing wussies I've ever seen in my life. I'm gonna punch people from UVA right in the neck. They wear suits to games. That's absurd.
So I feel like, you know, watching the game on Saturday against BYU, I think the comparison to the UNC game is eerily similar. I think it makes a lot of sense for how Halloween weekend kind of spookiness. Against UNC, UVA goes down really early, comes back to take a lead at halftime, and then ends up losing in really bad fashion, mostly because the defense cannot keep up with the other team's offense. They're both on the road. They were both against ranked teams. Does this have anything to do with, I want your opinion. Do you think this has anything to do with like how the teams are being prepared for these high profile road games?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily that as much as it is. I think we just have to consider like the game against UNC and even the game against Wake Forest. You know, our three losses are against the three best teams UVA has played, admittedly. And yeah. UNC is not ranked right now, although they definitely gave Notre Dame a good fight this weekend. But then Wake Forest is ranked 10th, and now BYU is ranked 17th. So I don't think it has as much to do with, like, getting prepared. I think it's more so that just this Virginia defense in particular, and even the offense to some extent, because the offense has stalled out in these games as well in the second half, as well as they played in the first halves of these games. But I think it's more so just there's a level of competition that this defense just isn't ready to face. And it can get real ugly in those situations, as we saw against UNC and BYU.
So against BYU, UVA only scores one touchdown after half. We scored 42 points in the first half, which is insane. And then we score one touchdown in the third quarter, none in the fourth quarter. I feel like some of this has to come back on the coaching staff and not just the players. I know the players aren't executing as much, but especially this season, it's become clear several times that I don't think that we adjust well after halftime. You know, like if you think about it, like BYU's defense clearly changed up what they were doing. BYU's offense stopped going tempo, started running the ball a lot more. Is our coaching staff not adjusting as well? Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, offensively, it's maybe a little bit tougher to say. I mean, I think maybe it's more so to Anai's credit just how good they've been in the first half, as then Anai might just really be out scheming people in the first half of games, and then maybe the defense of the opponent catches up. I mean, tough to say. I think, you know, I think maybe you could say it's coaching, but I think it's more so this 3-3-5 defense, which if we want to have a broader conversation about, we can. But Virginia has struggled so much to play this scheme, and they have said, you know, they really had to simplify the scheme, and there's less blitz calls. You know, I think the coverages are simpler, because what we saw is when they tried to start out the season with more on their plate, you know, UNC carved them up, Wake Forest carved them up. I mean, for that third quarter against Louisville carved them up. So I think what's happening is maybe the scheme is, you know, simpler, and then the defense or the opposing offenses are able to adjust to it after halftime. But, you know, I think it's a combination of that and the fact that just Virginia really isn't good in this defensive scheme right now. And they were making incremental progress, I would say, but I feel like a lot of that seemed to be lost against BYU.
It's so disheartening to see, you know, our offense score 42 points in the first half, you know, most of it in the second quarter, and then we still lose the game because we give up 66 points, most since a loss against Texas way back in the day. I forget the year. Do you know the year of that loss?
I don't know.
It's just frustrating to see that, you know, because, like, this team, I feel like the season has been, we've talked about the up and down of the season, right? The first two wins were awesome. We lose two in a row, UNC and Wake Forest, better ACC teams. And then we go on a four-game win streak against the ACC. Some really difficult wins against Miami and Louisville, both on the road. We got some really great wins in Duke and Georgia Tech. And then we come into BYU feeling like, it's a time to show kind of the rest of the country what UVA can do. And I think we did. We just also showed that we can't hang with really good teams.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that might be the biggest takeaway right now. And 1977 is actually the answer to your Texas question.
Okay.
So 66 points allowed versus BYU was the most since it was a 68-0 loss against Texas in 1977. And I should add, I don't think BYU had scored more than 35 points all season.
No, they haven't.
They scored 66 against UVA. So, I mean, there's clearly problems with the defense. And I think that's basically the best way to put it. I mean, I typically try to rewatch every game that UVA has played. Mm-hmm. I rewatched every game they've played this season. And I will admit it's Sunday, so maybe I'll get to it later this week and rewatching the BYU game. But I don't really know what I'm going to learn from that. You know, it's not like there was things that were oh so close. You know, it was big holes. It was missed tackles. It was just bad coverage. Like, you know, it was a lot of bad going on, and I don't think there's really going to be huge takeaways. Now, hopefully the staff can find some. That's what they're paid a lot of money to do. But yeah, so I mean, it's certainly frustrating, and I think level of competition is part of it. And, you know, as we alluded to, Virginia has probably lost against the best three teams they've played this year. I think they caught Miami at a good time. Van Dyke is starting to look the part at quarterback, and they obviously beat Pittsburgh this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, I mean, if we're talking about level of competition, we're going to see stronger opponents as we close out the season. You know, Notre Dame is ranked eighth. And again, this is another thing we can talk about. I actually think Virginia can hang with Notre Dame if Brennan Armstrong is playing. Now, of course, I don't know. It seems probably unlikely that he'll be able to.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pittsburgh just dropped out of the top 25. And then, oh yeah, by the way, Virginia Tech, which Virginia Tech, they could make a little bit of a run here looking at their schedule. So anyway, yeah, I mean, I think we're clearly struggling against teams that are, you know, above average. I think Virginia is doing what it should against the lesser opponents.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if Brennan Armstrong can't play, it might be tough to envision UVA winning another game this in the regular season.
Yeah, and that's disheartening too, because, you know, we're 6-3, so we are bowl eligible. But if we lose the last four games of the season against, you know, probably the four best teams we're going to face, you know, Wake has really come on strong, last undefeated team in the ACC. And, you know, UNC has Sam Howell and just destroyed us. But, you know, at BYU, which is a top 25 team, Notre Dame, which is a team that, you know, is always good. Pitt is at the top of the Coastal right now, and Tech we've had trouble beating. It's just frustrating that this team had the potential to be really good, a really good team, and mostly because of the offense. But the defense is holding us back, and it's so frustrating to me to watch the offense score 42 points in the first half, and then we lose by 17 points. We lose by three scores. I mean, it's not even close. It's not even close. And so I think that's where my frustration is.
Yeah, I mean, 35 points in a quarter, too, in the second quarter. I mean, the offense scored a touchdown on six straight possessions.
It's insane.
And I mean, it's explosive, man, and it was getting national attention. I mean, people enjoy watching UVA. They enjoy watching Brennan Armstrong because this is an offense that not only, like, UVA – people like haven't really seen before, but nationally this offense is producing at a rare clip. But I think the point you bring up, I think it's the perfect segue into just talking about this defense a little bit, because we've talked about it, you know, going back to the offseason when there were hints. When there were hints they were going to make the scheme switch, and then they did, and then there were the positives the first 2 weeks and the negatives. Like, we keep talking about it, and it still bothers me a little bit that we really haven't had a rhyme or reason to do so, or at least one that, you know, Bronco and the defensive staff have explained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Virginia last year was really bad against the pass. They were actually pretty good against the run, but they were really bad against the pass. But guess what? Virginia this year is bad against everything.
Yeah.
They're 121st. Out of, I think it's 129 teams, 130 teams.
I think it's
anyway, they're 100. Okay. So they're 121st in total defense, Pass defense is 92nd in the country, and then the rush defense is 124th in the mm-hmm. country. And like putting it into context with BYU, I mean, we allowed a career high pass yard total to their mm-hmm. quarterback, and we also allowed a career high rush total to their running back. I mean, this is a defense that teams get right against, you know, people, offenses that are, you know, maybe struggling or maybe not putting up explosive numbers. They face Virginia and they feel good again. You know, they're scoring a lot of points, but this is something that I think, you know, I'd really love to hear Bronco talk about why the scheme switch was made and then why they decided to do it now. Because as you alluded to, this is an offense that was putting up incredible numbers, still might. We'll see what happens with Brennan. But they're putting up numbers at a clip that's unprecedented in UVA's football history. And Bronco alluded to it before the season. They knew this offense was going to be really good. Mm-hmm. I think it might be better than they expected, but they knew it was going to be really good. So that brings the question, why make the scheme switch, you know, on defense? Is it because they thought there was more margin for error with the offense scoring more points? Is it because they had the super seniors here, the Joey Blunts, the Mandy Alonzos, the, you know, as much hate as they get, the Nick Grant and Devontae Crosses, the guys coming back, you know, did he think that maybe having those guys would make the switch easier and now is the time to do it? Because then you could also reverse that and make the argument that, hey, if the offense was going to be so good, maybe we just go for broke this year and say, hey, you know, like, let's stick with a 3-4. Let's do what we can, but let's try to have a really, really good year.
Yeah.
And Bronco was always thinking long term, so I don't think that's how he would have thought it through. But, you know, these are like the speculations we're making because we really don't know. And I, for one, would really like to hear, you know, the logic behind the scheme switch and, you know, why it was chosen to be done and why it was chosen to be done now. Because when you're giving up points like this and you're giving up yards and you're literally at the bottom of every defensive category, I mean, like, we're not creating turnovers, we're not getting sacks. You know, when you have a defense like this, I think some answers are probably warranted from the staff.
No, I agree. And, you know, I think the easy answer is just to say, like, the switch was made because in theory, the 3-3-5 should be better against the pass and against long balls, which was our Achilles heel last year, was the long passes that our secondary gave up. Our secondary was really bad last year, and last year our linebackers and defensive line were pretty serviceable, actually pretty good against the run, as you said earlier. When you put five defensive backs back there, the hope is that they can maybe stop more long balls, which I think this year we have. And unfortunately, what it's done is it's spread us out so much and we're so thin along the front line that people are able to just run down our throats. As you said, we're one of the worst teams in the country at defending the run. We give up 219 rushing yards per game to go along with 247 passing yards per game. And about 31 points per game, which is a lot. And luckily our offense has surpassed that a lot of times. But, you know, people gain so many yards rushing against us that we can't stop it. When you're rushing for 5 or 6 yards a carry against this UVA defense, you can just run it down our throats and just march down the field. And that's really what BYU did. BYU averaged, I think it was 8 yards on first down. I think it was 9. I think it was 9 yards on first down plays, which is outrageous. When you do that, you can do whatever you want, right? And so we have no way of stopping teams from scoring. Like, they score. The only reason we are 6-3 and not 4-5 is because of 2 field goal kickers, right? Like, we could easily be 4-5 and then have really no hope of getting a bowl game. But we have a bowl game because we have some luck on our side. And so I think the season is just, it's been kind of ruined by this defense that has not performed up to expectations or done what the coaching staff hoped it might do when they implemented it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to argue with that. And, you know, I don't really know what they're going for as far as personnel goes in this defense because they haven't told us. But, I mean, it's a shame. Because you still have good defensive players. You know, Nick Jackson is a great player. And he had 16 tackles. I want to say, I was just looking at stats earlier. He has 86 tackles on the season. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an impressive number. But so many times, you know, the weakness of this defense is just guys are really struggling with their gap integrity. And that's with the linebackers and it's with the secondary too. And that's part of the thing with 3-3-5 is you're playing with an extra defensive back on the field. So the defensive backs have more of a role in the run fits. And if a defensive back misses a run fit, as several have done over the past few weeks, then that's some problems and that can give up some big gains. But yeah, I mean, you have a great player in Nick Jackson who, you know, is just, it's a shame that he's having a transition in this defense. And Noah Taylor, I mean, we saw so many great things from Noah Taylor in 2019, but I feel like he's being played out of position now. And I feel like mm-hmm. he was played out of position last year as well. And so, you know, there's good players on this team. And I think there's talented youngsters that, you know, whether they're freshmen, sophomores, that have gotten some run and I think can be good players. You know, I think of Hunter Stewart. I think of Wes Weeks. You know, Deshaun Perry was getting some run. James Jackson. And those are just the linebackers. But, you know, you have these players and you have to ask yourself, you know, is this what they're really going for? Like, mm-hmm. Are they playing in position? Is this defense best aligned to their strengths? Because you would think that if they made the switch for the long term, then they probably should be. Like, that's probably what they had in mind, is getting these young guys in position to succeed and having a system they can recruit for moving forward. But, you know, the defense has just struggled so much, it's tough to really know.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, and I tweeted this out last night too, like, there's no way they can change the defense this late in the season, right? Like, if we had a bye week, like week 3 or week 4, like sometimes we have in the past, like in October, maybe, but probably doubtful. Like, we're going to see the 3-3-5 throughout the end of the season. They just can't change it on a whim. But, like, do you think they stick with this next year? Because it's not working right now. Like, this is one of the worst defenses in the country. It's one of Broncos' worst defenses ever. And he's a defensive guy. Like, he's a defensive coach. He's not an offensive coach. They have to change it next year, right?
I mean, something's got to change next year, and they reshuffled the staff defensively. I don't know if they want to evaluate that. I don't know if Bronco wants to, you know, I know he would be reluctant to, but I don't know if it makes sense for him to become the defensive coordinator mm-hmm. in place of Hal. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think they'd change it. I know they have the bye coming up before they play Notre Dame in 2 weeks. I don't think they changed the defense. At least this season, I could certainly see some adjustments being made and some adjustments have been made, but, you know, maybe just bringing Joey Blunt into the box more. And, mm-hmm. you know, his middle safety is, in theory, a safety that should be able to play in the box more. And my guess is that they're not doing that as much with him because of durability concerns. But, you know, Nick Grant has played in the box a decent amount. Maybe they do that. Maybe they use Antonio Clary more at one of the safety positions and bring him in the box. Like, I think you have to do something to stop the run. And, you know, maybe that's it. We saw some of that done in earlier games this season. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem. When you have so many defensive backs on the field and you play these teams that can spread you out. And, yeah, I mean, you're just left with 5-on-5 offensive linemen versus the front 5 at that point. Just hat on a hat, and it can work. So, anyway, long way of saying, I don't think they're going to change the base defense. As you alluded to, but maybe we'll see some tweaks for the final stretch here. Mm-hmm. Next season, I don't know. I mean, I think Bronco probably made the switch intending to stick with this for the long term. I mean, I think that's the only reason you make a switch like this, right? When you know there's probably going to be growing pains. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if this season has made him second guess that. And again, we're speculating because Nick Howell hasn't touched on why they made the switch. Bronco hasn't touched on why they made the switch, but I would think something has got to change this season. And whether it's the scheme, whether it's the coaching staff responsibilities, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it may be, I'm with you. Like, the Broncos, one of his tenets and one of the things I love a lot, just not just from a football and Broncos sense, but just in general, is that organizations are perfectly designed to get the results they get. Yeah. And I mean, this defense has been poor this year, yeah, without question. So you have to think something needs to change.
All right. I want to bring some stats into it. This was purely emotion from the start. I want to get real with it and say why I'm just so mad that we can't win games with this defense. There's been, and I'm going to go through all the losses so far and then some of our wins as well with the rushing defense that we've had. So against Carolina, Carolina had two 100-yard rushers that game. They had Ty Chandler, who averaged 9.9 yards a carry, 198 yards, two touchdowns, and Sam Howell, quarterback, 112 yards, 7.5 yards a carry. When you're averaging 10 yards a carry, you should just run it every time. Like, there's no reason. Sam Howell only had 300 yards passing on 14 completions that game, and he still ran for 112 yards. So that's, you know, that's kind of where we're at. Against Wake Forest, Wake Forest is kind of the outlier, but their runner, their main guy, Justice Ellison, still averaged 6.6 yards a carry on 86 yards. Against Miami's running back Cameron Harris averaged 7.9 yards a carry, 111 yards. That was in a win. Against Louisville, same thing. Hassan Hall gashed us for 11.6 yards a carry, 162 yards, one touchdown. And then Georgia Tech, another win. Jahmyr Gibbs had 132 yards and averaged 10 yards a carry. And against BYU, Algier had 266 yards, 9.2 yards a carry, five touchdowns on 29 attempts. I mean, when you just let people just run wherever they want to, because the front, as you said, the front five are blocking, the running back can just go and pick a gap where there's no linebacker and then just run. And, you know, whether it's gap assignments or whether it's the scheme itself or whether our players just cannot, you know, they blamed it a lot on the physicality of BYU, and that has something to do with it, but we just weren't tackling well either. And so, you know, it, like, the run defense, I think, is the main reason why this is not working for whatever reason. We have a new sponsor that you guys are going to love. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, and every time your teams win, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 7,000 plus early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.simbull.com to create a free account, and when you deposit, make sure to use the promo code SD to make your deposit risk-free. Visit symbull.com and use the promo code SD, and your deposit will be risk-free. That means even if you lose money, Symbull will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Join Symbull and start investing and profiting on your favorite teams. We are also sponsored by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is a live, audio-only sports talk platform. Talk to me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time. Get in on the conversations that you listen to on your podcasts every single day. All you need to do is download the Spotify Green Room app for free in the iOS App Store. Create a profile, link your Twitter, and join whatever groups you want. Go ahead and share your takes on Spotify Green Room.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree 100%. And thanks for pulling up all those stats. I mean, I think that illustrates perfectly the problem with the run defense. And on top of that, it's not even like we're great against the pass. We're 92nd nationally against the pass. I mean, this is a defense that struggles in all facets of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had very few sacks on the season. We've had very few turnovers on the season. And that used to be like the calling card of this defense. You think to 2018, it was all about turnovers. The Juan Thornhill, Bryce Hall, you know, Tim Harris, Brendan Nelson, like those guys were getting picks. And then you go to 2019 and all our guys were getting sacks. I mean, our defensive line guys had 4 and 5 sacks. I think Noah Taylor had 7.5 that year. You know, Snowden had a couple. Like it was 2018 was all about turnovers and 2019 was all about pressure. And then last year was weird, but then this year, like, there's no identity. Like, they've had to scale back all the pressure packages because, you know, basically they had to simplify things just to, you know, keep up. And I thought it was interesting. Again, I haven't rewatched this game yet. you know, TBD if I even will, but the nickel packages, they were using a lot of 1-5-5 in the past few games. And this game against BYU, they kind of went away from it. They went some 2-4-5, which we had seen before. So, you know, I say that because, like, they're really grappling with what this identity is. And, you know, even what we thought we knew, you know, coming out of this 4-game win streak and against Duke and Georgia Tech in particular, you know, it seemed to get shuffled again and the loss against BYU. So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad you bring up the stats. And I mean, I think it's hard to argue that there's, you know, nothing wrong with this defense because there's certainly a lot wrong. And, you know, against Notre Dame and against Pitt and against Virginia Tech, those are all three physical teams. And this defense is going to get tested much as they were against BYU. And BYU was probably the worst matchup for us of the season, but it's not going to get much easier, especially against Notre Dame and Pitt coming up.
Right. And even Virginia Tech, who is a physical team, and even though they're not playing well right now, you know, they're 4-4, they will play up to whatever we, however good we are in that final game of the season. So, you know, I'm not looking forward to that game right now at all because, you know, they're just going to run it down our throats and then do whatever to us. It's just going to be awful. One last stat, all of those running backs, most of them almost doubled their season average in yards per rush. Jahmyr Gibbs only averaged 5.2. He had 10.2 against UVA. Hassan Hall is really, for Louisville, really the only one who didn't do that. He averages 7.5 yards a carry, which is insane, but he averaged 11.6 against UVA. Cameron Harris, kind of same thing, 5.8 to 7.9 for Miami. Justice Ellison, another one, 5.3 average, 6.6 total. But Ty Chandler, you know, he had 5.5 to 9.9. And of course, Algier last night averages 5.6 yards a carry, but 5.7 yards a carry, but 9.2 last night. So it's just like we're allowing these running backs to have career highs. And we allowed BYU to have score the most points they've ever scored before in a game. And it makes me mad the most that Brennan Armstrong's having one of the best seasons oh, probably you can argue maybe the best season a UVA quarterback's ever had. Breaks the single season passing yards record last night as well before going out with a rib injury. And he's not going to be able to get recognized for that because of this defense holding him back, right? Like, a lot of people think he should be, well, a lot of UVA fans think he should be in Heisman conversations because he has the most passing yards in the country, but he's not. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, Heisman politics is kind of weird. They like to give it to teams who actually win and do well. This defense isn't allowing Brennan to do that. And so this team might be remembered for going 6-6, you know, and depending on how our bowl game goes, 7 or 6, 6 and 7, because of the defense. It's going to be another average year for a lot of people in their memories.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great transition to talk about the offense a little bit, mm-hmm. and Brennan Armstrong as well. But yeah, I mean, you could also probably make the reverse argument of that as well, is that maybe part of the reason Brennan Armstrong's stats are so good is because they have to be, because they know they have to score basically every possession.
Yeah.
So there's certainly that as well. But listen, I mean, as you alluded to, the Heisman contest is largely a popularity contest, mm-hmm. and it goes typically to a player that's on a playoff caliber team.
Yeah.
The last player to win the Heisman that was not on a playoff caliber team was Lamar Jackson and Louisville in 2016.
But he was insane. But he had insane numbers that year.
He had insane numbers, and I think he had insane quote-unquote moments too. Like, yeah. I still remember vividly him hurdling that Syracuse guy for the touchdown.
Yes.
And Brennan Armstrong had, if UVA was able to win the game against BYU, I think Brennan Armstrong would have started getting more attention. Because he had moments like that in that game.
Yeah.
You know, the one that comes to mind is when he eluded two defenders from that sack. And, you know, he's almost back at the 50-yard line. And he takes off and just honestly walks in for that touchdown run. Mm-hmm. And obviously he was putting up all the passing yards, too. So he had his chance to get moments in there. And he largely capitalized on them. It's just a shame he got hurt. And, you know, I think it probably makes sense to talk a little bit about, you know, what expectations might be for Brennan Armstrong, mm-hmm. and honestly, Jay Wolfolk potentially, and the rest of the offense.
It's a big what if moment for us, because we don't know for certain what his, the extent of his injury is. You know, Brennan came off the field, and if you read his lips, you could see him pointing to his rib and saying, "It's broken, it's broken." And if anyone's ever had a rib injury before, you know that it is really difficult to breathe. It hurts. It is really difficult to do things normally. And if you're throwing a football, you can't do it with a broken rib. Like, you'd be in a lot of pain doing that. And I know Brennan's tough, but it's really hard to, I can't see, if he has a broken rib, I can't see him playing against Notre Dame or maybe the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, if history is any indication, you know, I know from your perspective, Drew Brees came back from broken ribs last year. I think it was like 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. Like, there's a very real possibility if Brennan Armstrong did in fact break his ribs, then, you know, there's a very real possibility he might not play for the rest of the season. And in which case, or sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but you know, like, Drew Brees was also, what, 40 when that happened? It's tougher on the body, so maybe Brennan can come back earlier, but it would be, I think he'd be hard pressed to do that.
Yeah, and you know, if Brennan isn't the quarterback, then it's going to be true freshman Jay Wolfolk, and I like Wolfolk, and I think the staff likes him too. I mean, we knew, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, about him being the first quarterback off the bench against Duke and what that meant. Well, it's probably good we had that conversation, so we don't necessarily have to rehash it here, but you know, Wolfolk's going to be challenged, and he's going to, his first start, assuming he starts in 2 weeks, is going to be against what is currently the number 8 team in the country in Notre Dame. And I mean, that's a huge stage for him, for a true freshman. And, you know, I think he'll have his moments, but I think realistically, you know, having somewhat tempered expectations is, you know, probably the best way to go about it, because they're probably gonna have to scale back the offense for him first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, I don't expect him to throw 60 times a game like Brennan did. They're probably gonna try to run the football more, probably try to make there be fewer possessions in the game so he's able to capitalize on them more. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. And it's also, from a personnel standpoint, kind of a shame as well, because, you know, we brought in two quarterbacks in this class, being Jay Woolfolk and Jacob Rodriguez. And we already burned Rodriguez's red shirt because he's playing that football player position. And now it looks like we'll probably have to burn Jay Woolfolk's red shirt as well,
yeah.
You know, if he's the one playing these last few games. So, you know, it's a shame from that perspective as well. So anyway, I'm curious what you think about, you know, we haven't seen much of Woolfolk, but, you know, him potentially finishing out the season as a starter. How do you feel about that? How do you think the offense might change? You know, what's your comfort level with him if he does play the rest of the season moving forward?
I mean, I'm not comfortable with that at all. I would much prefer Brennan Armstrong. Brennan Armstrong's been incredible. His accuracy's been really good. He's made big plays. You know, he had two interceptions last night. Neither of them were particularly, the first one was particularly bad. Just gave BYU a lot of momentum. But then the second one, I think he was trying to do too much. And of course, we learned later he had an injured rib on that throw. And so probably wasn't in the best spot to make that kind of throw that he wanted to and just couldn't get it there. But when Jay Woolfolk came in, I mean, we've seen him be able to run the ball, which is, you know, important in this kind of offense. We've also seen him... he made some good passes last night. He was 2 of 5, 35 yards. So not awful, but, you know, he's a freshman quarterback. It's very obvious that he is a freshman quarterback. And while he does, I mean, I don't know about you, but to me it seems like he's got some poise in the pocket. Definitely was able to evade some defenders last night when on that last drive that we had. But, you know, as you saw, it was fourth down. And it kind of looked like, I guess he was trying to get to Woods, but overthrew him, kind of looked like he just threw it away out of bounds. And that was kind of the game right there. So he's definitely a freshman. You know, it's definitely hard to come in, you know, off the bench in the fourth quarter in Provo when you're already down 17. And that's a tough environment to make your first play in, but you know, he'll have 2 weeks to prepare. It's not the worst situation in the whole world. There's definitely worse quarterbacks to have there, but I'd much prefer Brennan Armstrong in that situation. How do you feel?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you summarized it well. I mean, obviously, I think we'd all prefer Armstrong. Right. I mean, Armstrong is playing at an amazing level right now. And, you know, I think he's deserving of all the recognition he's getting both in Charlottesville and nationally as well. I think you're right. Woolfolk does look poised. You don't get the feeling that the moment's too big for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason why he probably passed Ira Armstead on the depth chart, is because of that poise. And you can see how he's comfortable in the pocket and moving around. And he's smaller than the quarterbacks that UVA has typically had. He's, I think, maybe generously listed at 6'1". I'm not even sure if he's that tall.
Yeah, I saw 5'11".
Oh, well, I'm looking at his recruiting profile, so maybe he's shrunk. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he's 5'11". He looks way more like 5'11" than 6'1".
That's what it says. That's what it says on ESPN, 5'11", 200 okay. pounds.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to be slightly different, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, he's coming in. I think he's a really talented player, and Virginia doesn't recruit, you know, a lot of 4 and 5 star players. But, you know, like for context sake, he was a pretty mid 3-star prospect is probably the best way to put it. He was the 34th ranked quarterback in the class, according to 24/7. According to the composite at 24/7, he was the 58th best quarterback in the class.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, I mean, Bryce Perkins wasn't highly recruited. Kurt Benkert wasn't highly recruited. You know, heck, Brennan Armstrong wasn't really highly recruited as well. But, you know, just putting the context out there, this isn't DJ Uiagalelei coming off the bench last year against Notre Dame. I mean, this is, you know, the type of players that Virginia has had success developing through the system.
Right.
But he is a true freshman. So anyway, I say all that to just put some context out there that we're going to put him in a really difficult situation. And thankfully, you know, the offensive line is overall good in pass protecting. I mean, our receivers are outstanding. I mean, Dontavian Wicks is 28 yards away from having 1,000 yards receiving. And through 9 games, you have to remember he missed almost all of the Louisville game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Keaton Thompson, 663 yards receiving. Billy Kemp, 562. Rashawn Henry, 493. Jelani Woods, 446. I mean, this is an incredible receiving core, and it's a shame we're not talking about them this podcast, and instead we're focusing on the defense and the backup quarterback. But, you know, he's going to have help, and we've seen how Anai last year really changed the playbook. You know, when Brennan Armstrong wasn't able to play against Wake Forest. So, like, I don't think we're going to go all dramatic and have, like, necessarily, like, this three quarterback system we saw then. But, you know, I think we're going to see more Keaton Thompson. We'll probably mm-hmm. see more Jacob Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. We might see a couple trick plays thrown in there. You know, Devin Darrington looked really good. That 49-yard touchdown run was really, really impressive. So, like, we might see more of him, more of Wayne. Mike Collins has been dressing for games, although he hasn't been playing. So listen, there's a lot of different ways this offense can go. And I feel overall pretty comfortable that Anai is going to put the best game plan together that's possible. But it could look different than what we've been seeing the first 9 games of the season with Brennan Armstrong.
I mean, Dr. Bob's called some fantastic games so far this season from his side of the ball. So we've had a lot of problems with Anai over the years. A lot of fans have, just for different reasons, but like this year he's been pretty much flawless, I would say. There's been, you know, there's always a few plays you're like, what the heck was that? But overall, like, the games have been really well called by Anai, and he's using Brennan well. He's using his tools really well. He's getting Dontavian Wicks, Jelani Woods, Keaton Thompson, Billy Kemp open, basically whenever they want to be. And I'm hoping that he'll do the best that he can with what he has, right? So if that's with Jay Woolfolk, that's great. If we do some weird hybrid thing with Keaton Thompson and Woolfolk and maybe Rodriguez, and who knows, maybe even Ira Armstead gets another shot at getting some QB time, that's great too. But I'm expecting that we'll see a mix of things, and, you know, probably some Jay Woolfolk as well. And we've been saying we hope there's more rushing this whole season, but, you know, maybe some more rushing. And, like, I want to talk about the rushing real quick. Like, Devin Darrington, you said 2 rushes, 60 yards, 1 touchdown. And even Wayne had 4 rushes, 32 yards. That's an 8-yard average, right? I feel like we've got the people to rush. And maybe it's just because, you know, Brennan has been passing so well, they just kind of put everyone back and, you know, expect the pass. But, you know, maybe this is a time to get more rushing into the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a big key of that will be Jay Woolfolk using his legs as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the rushing offense really opened up the past couple of weeks when Brennan Armstrong was able to run. And Brennan Armstrong had 94 yards rushing last night. You know, he had 99 yards rushing against Georgia Tech. So, you know, I think the past couple weeks in particular, when he's been able to run, has really opened everything else up. So I think Woolfolk, you know, maintaining that ability will be big. Now, it's going to be different with Woolfolk because A, he's not as big as Brennan, so mm-hmm. it's going to be a different style of running. They're probably not going to run these counters or these inside zones with him like they do with Brennan Armstrong. It'll probably be more outside the hashes. And it'll also be different because they're going to have to be careful with him, because the backup behind him is Ira Armstead. And I really don't think they're comfortable with Ira Armstead throwing the ball right now. And for all we know, we might have, Jacob Rodriguez, you know, he might be playing more quarterback the coming weeks, just out of precaution. You know, he really hasn't played quarterback all season, but maybe he does. So anyway, it's going to look different, but I agree with you. I mean, I think Devin Darrington deserves more touches. I mean, to be honest with you, when Devin Darrington came in, you know, I was kind of thinking this is just Wayne Talapapa 2.0. Mm-hmm. Like I was kind of curious what the decision making was, but I think it showed to be good scouting. I think Devin Darrington is, at least from my expectations, he's far exceeded them, and he looks like a strong runner, great burst. Like he had that stiff arm and the speed to get to the end zone. I'd love to see him get more work. I think Wayne is good in the role he plays. You know, we'll see where Mike Collins is able to come back in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think the running game will take more focus now if Brennan Armstrong is not able to play. It just might look a little bit different than what we've seen so far this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think we'll see as the week goes on, you know, if we find out more information about Brennan's injury this week, I kind of expect they'll hold on to that information until next week, probably when they're preparing for Notre Dame. They'll probably have to make a decision whether Brennan's going to be able to play or not. And that's going to determine practice and everything like that. So I expect we'll hear more next week. And I expect there's going to be a lot of rumors floating around too about, you know, his status and everything. So just be on the look. I would say don't trust the message boards. Just, you know, wait until Bronco tells you, because he'll know best and the doctors know best. And, you know, I hope Brennan's okay and hope he can come back this season. But broken ribs, man, are tough. And I just hope he's all right. That's the main line, because, you know, he's got a bright future whether he comes back. I'm almost positive he'll come back next year. But, you know, if he did go to the draft this year, I would think, you know, he could have a huge future in the NFL. So, but yeah, just hope he's all right.
Yeah, I mean, him as well as, you know, I know Billy Kemp left the game towards the end. Mm-hmm. Wayne Talapapa looked like potentially concussion symptoms, you know. Hopefully all our guys get right. And yeah, you know, you make a great point about Brennan Armstrong. Is I'm with you. I think he comes back next season. I think, you know, there's things that he can clean up that can make him legitimately a high round draft pick if he does choose to come back. But I think what he's shown this year is that he's got all the skills. Like he can make every throw on the field. He's a good runner.
He's got a cannon.
You know, he's got a cannon for sure. Literally can make any throw. Like that touch pass over the middle to Keaton Thompson last night was amazing. Like that's such a hard throw. And he's also throwing deep balls. He's throwing, you know, darts to, you know, outside the hashes. So anyway, I'm saying this because, you know, if he's got the tools to go pro now, if he wanted to, I think he will come back. So I think his draft stock could probably dramatically improve. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we should just assume necessarily that he's going to come back, because I think there is probably a chance that, you know, maybe he's gets a good projection and decides to take off. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a shame if Brennan Armstrong is not able to play these final few games. And I guess I'm with you. I don't think the staff will probably tell us that information until they absolutely have to. So that might, I mean, we might not know until day of Notre Dame, but anyway, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Well, Rob, I want to thank you for letting me complain and just kind of ramble and say the same things over and over again. And, you know, kind of the same things that everyone's been saying this whole season, or at least, you know, especially last night, which is our defense is bad. It's really bad. I called it garbage last night. I called it trash. I said that they sucked. And I think those things are all still true. It's been tough to watch the defense this season, especially because the offense is so good. I think that's what makes it really tough. Rob, is there any last word you would like to say, thoughts or feelings about the season defense and how you're looking at the last three games?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is that as crazy as it sounds on paper, you know, I think Virginia actually came out ahead yesterday, at least as far as the ACC race goes.
Okay. Maybe, I think you're right.
Maybe not. Maybe we lost kind of the realistic chance to win the ACC, but with Pittsburgh losing, Virginia does control its own destiny.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Pitt controls its own destiny too. And as weird as it might sound, I think Virginia Tech also controls their own destiny.
I think you're right.
So anyway, Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. On Twitter, if you were following it yesterday, like, everyone was all excited going into the game because Pittsburgh lost. And then after the game, it's, oh, man, what happened? So right. Anyway, I think we should mention that Virginia does technically control its own destiny and the ACC race for the Coastal Division. It just seems less likely than it did, you know, 24, 48 hours ago that Virginia will be able to capitalize on that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, and our game against Notre Dame won't count as an ACC game. So we can get blown out in there and still win the Coastal Division and try and get a rematch with Wake Forest in it's in Charlotte this year. Is it always in Charlotte?
Yeah, I think it's always in Charlotte.
Okay, well, in Charlotte, and that would go poorly if we don't have Brennan back. In any case, I think I want to end it here. I don't want to keep on rambling. You know, we said 30 minutes for the pod. It's been 50, and this seems to happen a lot. But thanks for hashing it out with me and hopping on short notice. But thanks to everyone for listening. No, it was a tough loss, but just know that this is you know, with the bye week, hopefully we do fix some problems. I don't know what can be fixed, but in any case, what you can do is make sure to follow us on Twitter at Guys and Ties Pod. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram and Snapchat for any bonus content out there at Guys and Ties Pod. Go ahead and follow us on Spotify and iTunes if you like listening to us. And we will see you guys next time, probably for a basketball preview sometime this week. So get ready for that. We will see y'all next time. Go Hoos.
Go Hoos.